On page 450, top of the page, we're in the middle of learning or finishing up what was called the Shulchan. Now, the Shulchan was the table in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan, what we're learning, where they actually put the showbread, what was called the Lachem Apanim. And last time we learned that the miracle of it was that the bread was baked on Friday. They changed the old bread to the new bread on Shabbos. Even when they changed the bread, we didn't mention this last time, even when they changed the bread, they put on the new bread before they took off the old bread. That the table should always have the show bread on it. The miracle was that the bread stayed warm and fresh for the entire week. That means when they took it off the next Shabbos, it was still warm, as if it was freshly baked. And we learned that it was divided amongst the Kohanim. There were 12, as we learned, the 12 showbreads. 6 were given to the Kohanim who left. 6 were given to the Kohanim of the new shift. So every week, it was half old shift, new shift. What?
Okay, so the bread they took off when they're putting the new bread on is what they would eat in
the old, right, a week later.
Okay. Now, why
do you need sacrifices? Why do you need a menorah? That's what God wanted. Well, no, there's meanings behind it. We'll soon see the concept of parnasa and the shulchan and natural ways. Now, we're middle of learning about the shulchan. Okay. Now, by the way, this is the finished shulchan. That is the finished product of the shulchan. Okay. Now we're in the middle of learning the details, but the bottom of the shulchan, as the Torah says, you make it out of wood. And then you plate it with gold. Okay? So this was the bottom of the actual table. Okay? It was made with wood, plated with gold, pure gold. There were holes on the bottom of the table, as you see, that they put the poles in. There were 2 poles to go into the shulchan, that when they carried it, as they moved around in the midbar, they always had the poles to be able to carry the shulchan. Then, the next thing we learned, and this book is very good with this, they built a crown, okay, a crown, it's a mezgeres, a crown, okay, and mezgeres, what? It was a frame, then on top of the frame they made a golden zerzahav, a golden crown. So they built this frame. There's 2 opinions, was it on over the table or under the table, you know, under the base of the table. But whatever it was, that's the next thing. Now what we're up to now is this part. Now, as you can see in the finished picture, this is the way the shulchan actually looked, okay? Now, on each side, as you could see, they built 4 frames that went on top of the table. I can't see backwards, but there were 2 on each side, okay? Now, those frames were actually, we'll see the measurements of it, it was, they went, actually started from the ground, and they went up 3.5 amis. An amis is 2 feet, to make it easier. So you're talking about, it went up 7 feet off the ground. Now, what was the purpose of these frames? The purpose of these frames were like this. Just to get the... The frames were basically there to hold the shelves for the bread. Okay? Now, they had 12 showbread. 6 on one half, and 6 on the other half. Now, the bottom loaf was on the actual table. Okay, so 2 breads were on the actual table itself. Then they needed to go up. Now they just didn't want to put 1 bread on top of the next. They needed space between the breads for it to breathe, so to speak. So they built those 2 frames, starting from the floor, going up 7 feet, 4 of them. And then they had tubing across as a form of a shelf. And then they put the showbread, the lechem upon him, in its own pan, on top of the tubings. Okay? So they made the separation between... In fact, you have the picture in the Siddur, in the Chumash, I mean. But it's not as nice of a picture as what it really was. Okay, these are stam, the general concept of it. The way it really looked was like this book has, and not like this picture has it. But if you notice, there was a Mizgeres, there was a frame. Then they had the crown, as you could see, the Zer Zahav. Then they had these two things on the sides going up. And then, so there were tubings, and then they were able to put the bread on top of the tubings. Now,
each shelf has one or two breads?
No.
Two loaves?
Each shelf had one, but there were two frames. Okay? So there was two breads on the actual table, one bread on each first shelf of each frame, which is two. So one of five shelves.
What was the purpose for all this?
He beat you to it.
I know, yeah, I'm sure.
In simple English?
No, Chinese.
I don't speak Chinese. I have a pen from China, $3. It's a fake Mont Blanc. Cost $3 in China. But I don't speak Mont Blanc. Mont Blanc. Anyway, we'll soon see. But the bottom line is, this is what Hashem wanted. Okay? After Hashem wanted it, we'll see. The Mefarshim discuss what's the purpose of the table. You know, okay, I can understand the Mizbech, you have to bring sacrifices. But what's the purpose of a menorah? We'll soon see. Now,
was this the same one as in the Midbar, as in the desert?
This is the Midbar one.
Yeah.
Now, these were the frames, the pans, that the showbreads laid on for the week. Now, these fit onto those tubings in the frame, which were the shelves. The tubings were actually the shelf. Okay? There was space though between the tubing. And then, they put the breads. Now, they didn't bake them in these because these were made out of gold.
Pure gold?
Pure gold. So they baked them in iron frames like this. And then they took them out and put it for the week on top in these golden pans. Okay? Now, the interesting thing is, the Mefarshim don't talk about it too much, very little, but the showbreads, they were big. The actual lechem upon him was very strange because the breads were 10 tfachim long, 5 tfachim wide, and 1 tefach high. Okay. Using, again, to make it simplistic, a tefach is 4 inches, an amma is 6 tefachim, which is 24 inches, which is 2 feet. That means the length of the showbread was 10 tefachim, okay? 10 tefachim, which is 40 inches long, okay? 5 tefachim wide, meaning 20 inches wide. And the height of it was 1 tefach, 4 inches. Now, the problem with this is, how did they fit across the table? Because the table, the shulchan, well, 1 second. What do you think, they didn't figure it out? The table, the shulchan, the pasuk says, 2 amas long. Okay, that means if this would be the table, forget about the frames. The frames were just there shelving to hold the bread. But let's say this is the shulchan. So it's 2 amas this way, 4 feet this way, and 2 feet this way. Okay?
What is mentioned?
The table was, the length was double the width. Okay. Now, the width of the table was 1 amma. Right? 1 amma is 6 tefachim. Right? 1 amma is 6 tefachim. A tefach is 4 inches. I'm just making it easier for everybody. And an amma is 2 feet. Okay? That means the width of the table was 6 ammas. The bread, 6 tefachim, I'm sorry, 6 tefachim. The bread was 10 tefachim. But they couldn't fit this way because you need to make two stacks. So what they did was, it went in the width. That means the length of the bread, the 10th fachem of the bread, went in the width of the table.
So you have 2 inches extra?
Not 2 inches, two tafachs, and each side extra. The table...
8 inches.
The table was 6 tfachim. 1 am is 6 tfachim. So the table was, let's speak tafachs now. This table was 6 tfachim wide. The bread was 10 tfachim long. That means you had 2 tfachim sticking out on this side and 2 tfachim sticking out on this side. Because the table was 6. That means the table in inches. The table was 2 feet, and these were 40 inches.
That's why they made curves.
That's why they doubled them up. The Mishnah Menachah says they doubled them up. That's why the bread went like this. Because otherwise it would be sticking out of the table. And you can't have it sticking out of a table because there's a frame here. The frame is not... It closes it up, right? So how did they put a 40-inch bread on a 24-inch table? So it was from 24...
They baked it in that shape.
So in other words, if you would open it up, it would be 10 tefachim. But it was kafel, meaning it was doubled, folded up. Then it fit on the table. So what they did was like this. Just, if you have a blackboard, it would be much easier. But the table was 2 amos long, right? To me, the table was 2 amos is 4 feet. Now, half of it would be 2 feet. Now, the width of the bread, was 5 tefachim. We said, it was 10 tefachim long, 5 tefachim wide. Okay? So it's 5 tefachim and 5 tefachim is 10 tefachim, which is an amma and 4 tefachim left over. So there was a little space between the two things, between the two frames.
Basically, 1 inch from here, 1 inch from there, no?
Not inch, one tefach.
In inch speaking.
Not inch.
If it was 40 and this was 2 feet. 2 feet is 24 inches.
That right.
If this was 20 inches, we have 1 inch here, 1 inch here, no?
No. It was 24 and the bread was 40. The table, not double. Double would be 48.
Almost double.
The bottom line is the width of the table was 2 feet, 24 inches wide. The lechem aponim themselves were 40 inches wide. Okay? Right. Meaning, so it's 12 inches
extra.
16 inches extra. 16 inches extra. So 8 inches was sticking out on one side, seemingly. 8 inches on the other side. But what they did is they folded up the bread. Like in this picture, you see that the pans were folded on the side. So the bread actually went up. Because there was a double height of the bread.
Are those the cooking pans?
They didn't cook them in it. Because these are gold. You can't cook in gold. You're going to melt it.
You can't cook in what?
Gold. You can't cook in gold. You'll melt it. So they cooked it in steel, iron.
And then they transferred it.
And then they transferred after it was baked. To the golden things. So the way it worked was, the bread went this way, six levels, then on the second half of the table, the same thing. It was again six levels. So therefore, like you see, on this picture, there's two frames on the sides.
There are 24 pieces of bread.
12 breads, six and six.
How high is each shelf?
Huh?
Each shelf.
Well, it was, I don't know if it's, it says a cheshbon what it is. There was just enough room that there was a little space, right, even when it did, there was a little space for the air to officially to keep it warm. But the miracle was it stayed warm the whole time. So what, in fact, this is actually the picture from the front page, but that's the whole shulchan with the poles, with the border, with the crown, with the all the various different things. Then, you can't see it in the picture, but at the bottom, between the two breads, with two bowls with spices in it. The Devishta said, you have to put it there. Levaina Zaka, what we say Shabbos after davening, Vakachta say if you say it. Levaina Zaka was there, that's it, it was just there. So this is basically the whole Shulchan. And that's why in 450, if you look, just the last psukim, and sentence 29, it says, you should make its dishes, its spoons, its shelving tubes, its pillars, which should be covered with pure gold, you should make them. On the table, you should place the showbread before me always. Now, the reason why it's called showbread, why is it called lechem aponim, showbread? Because you look, at when the pans, the sides went up, it's only on the two sides. And the other two sides, in the middle, it was open. So you're able actually to see the bread. Because it only went up on two sides, not in all four. It wasn't a baking pan when you bake a little cake. There's up on all four sides. This was only up on two sides. So the other two sides were open. So it's called the lechem aponim.
Is that why some of the Jews have the minhag on Shabbat, they put 12 pieces of challah?
That's one of the reasons why some Polish tzaddikim... some Polish tzaddikim... No, I'm saying great tzaddikim. Today also, in previous generations, they used to put, instead of two challahs on the table Shabbos, they put 12. Because the lechem aponim, it's the shulchan, the Shabbos, shulchan, you know. But the bakers. It's probably somewhere in the Beis Hamikdash that they baked it. It says in the Gemara that there was a place in the Beis Hamikdash they baked it. I'm sorry to inform you it was baked by men.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, I'm just telling you. I don't know, some people may get insulted. They didn't let women work in the Beis Hamikdash. So the bakers, and by the way, the cleaners were also men. The house crew. The house staff. No, they couldn't work on the left-handed Kohanim. They didn't work actually with the Korbanis and the Mizbeach, but they did other jobs.
If you had any kind of blemish, you couldn't do something.
Right, but there's a lot of definitions of what blemishes are that the Torah says a Kohen can't work. Now, what was the significance of the table? So you say like this. When Hashem created the world, initially when Hashem created the world something from nothing. It was called Yesh Me'ayin. Hashem made nothing, basically, and He made nothing into something. But after Hashem did that, and made the world, after Hashem made the world Yesh Me'ayin, like we mentioned the other week, Hashem wanted everything now to go in a natural way. Hashem wants everything in a natural way. So therefore Hashem says, you need a bracha, you need a blessing for something, you need a vessel. So if you need a bracha, let's say for panasa, you can't lay in bed a whole day and say, God will provide. You know, and God can do a miracle, and God will provide. You know, the famous story with the son-in-law, with the father-in-law. And God will provide, but you have to make a bracha. So Hashem says, the panasa of the world, you have to make a vessel. So the Beis Hamikdash, so to speak, was the vessel for the world. So Hashem said, I want you to bake bread, which symbolizes, you know, parnos and things like that. And therefore, that will be the keli, the vessel, that the people will be able to have the vessel for all the brachas. Now, that's why, like this, we learned last time, the Aron, the Ark, is what's called Keser Torah, the crown of Torah. Shulchan, as in Pesach Shulchan Malachim, is the crown of Malchus, of royalty, of sovereignty. It also applies to the concept of Parnasa, you know, Gashmis and things like that. Now, some interesting Mefarshim learn, the word Shulchan, obviously in Hebrew means a table, but Shulchan also comes from the word Shliach, Shlichus, being God's messenger. So he says, what God is telling us by having the showbread, the parnasa, the bread and so on, that when you give a poor man, meaning Hashem says, you are my shliach. When you give a poor man bread, so then you'll be able to have a parnasa, because then you got shliach helping out another Jew, so then God will give it to you. In fact, they say, he brings down over here Shulchan, Shin Lamed Ches Nun, is an acronym for Shaleach Locha Chosid Ne'emon. God will send to you a trusted righteous chosid to be able to help you. Or, another Rosh Tevis for Shulchan they bring down, Shoyel Locha Chanina Nesina. Meaning, if you give to help somebody else out, then Hashem will give it to you.
Does it have to be Jewish?
There is an expression in English, charity begins at home. I honestly believe that before we give to the animals, we should give to people. People need it more than animals, even though not everybody agrees with that. I told you, they once came to demonstrate, they were doing kaparis 1 year. There's a true story in Monica, they were doing kaparis 1 year. And they had the animal rights groups came to demonstrate outside the kaparis, Erev Yom Kippur. So the guy that did it told me, he went over to them, he said, I don't understand you. There's an abortion clinic a few blocks away from here. Why don't you demonstrate there? Why are you coming to demonstrate against killing animals? Why don't you go demonstrate against killing people? So the guy said, they said to him, this is worse. Killing chickens is worse than killing babies. That's what they told him. So, I mean, you know, that's the way it goes. But it says, the concept of a shulchan, by the way, we know that a table that you eat is like a mizbeach. But Chazal also say it's the concept of a shulchan, and therefore the message of the shulchan, when a person eats, they have to remember it's, you know, God's, the parnasa takagav from God. The Gemara tells a story that one of the amiroim of the Gemara, whenever he would sit down to eat, and the food was already on the table, he prayed to God to give him food for the meal. Not for another meal. For this meal where the food was already on the table, he davened to Hashem that God, please give me food for this meal. So the commentators asked, I got bread for the next meal I can understand, but this meal you have already the food, why are you davening? He wanted to be aware, so to speak, that even what he has now came from Hashem. And that's why the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, you know, when you have a meal, you have to speak a word of Torah. If not, it's Zivchei Mesim, it's the sacrifices of the dead. You need, because a shulchan is the holy thing, and that's the meaning of the shulchan malachim, and the things of the kings. Now, he says another thing. He says, why did the Kohen eat from the showbread, from the lechem upon him? So he says, the power of the Yetzer Hara comes when you eat and drink. Like, you know, when you're fasting, you're not in the mood of sinning. Because you don't... To sin, you need koyach.
Energy.
You need energy to sin. You don't... If you don't have energy, you can't sin. Huh?
It's true.
Okay. So he says, the power of the Yetzer Hara comes from eating and drinking. So he says, well, like I said, Vayishman Yeshudim Vayivot. So he says that they ate from the lechem upon him, that they should have koyach, not to sin, God forbid, but they were able to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Especially when they ate the miracle bread that stayed warm a whole week, and so on and so forth. So therefore, it was a blessed food, and that helped them not to have any foreign thoughts when they were working in the Beis HaMikdash, because it was a spiritual bread. So therefore, it's like the Gemara says about the man. The man that fell from heaven, there was no waste. Normally, when a person eats, you find the expression, you have to go to the bathroom. Why? Because there's waste in the food. So the good food, you stay in the stomach, and the waste, you give out. The man, because it came from heaven, was such a blessed food, there was no waste from the man. Everything of the man was digested in a healthy way, so to speak. So it says the same thing was with this. The Aveda needed to eat and to be strong, to be able to work in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore Hashem wanted, and this is one of the concepts of the Shulchan, was to have the spiritual food that they should be able to eat and drink, you know, and do it in a healthy way. Okay, that's the Shulchan. Now we go to the Menorah.
What about the half a day when they left?
Huh? that they what that the kedusha that they had it during the Beis Hamikdash, the Aveda should last them until the next shift. The lechem upon him was not chametz; it was matzah. Even though it was high, but it didn't rise. The dough didn't rise.
What do you mean?
The lechem upon him was not chametz; it was matzah.
So it was 4 inches thick.
It was tefach
of matzah.
Yeah.
Like the
thick sardic matzah. Yeah.
There's big matzah as
well. The only lechem that they had in the Beis Hamikdash was chametz, was the two breads, the shtei lechem and shvuos. Chametz the offender. But like this, the lechem upon him was not chametz, Gemara says.
So it was like hard to eat.
But if it stayed warm, obviously.
And he just said that matzah, when you first baked it, it's soft.
Yeah.
Very soft.
Well,
if you're ever in a matzah bakery, yeah, when they take the matzah out of the oven, it's bended. They bend it very, it's bendable very easily.
If it's staying warm all week, it's actually.
It's probably soft. I'm sure they're allowed to take a knife and cut it. I mean, you know, I don't know if they have to. Okay, page 450, now we're up to Pasuk Lamed Aleph, the Menorah. Now the Menorah, as you see in the picture in this book, the Menorah has the round branches. Even in this book, which is interesting, this is the Menorah in this book. Okay? Now according to this book, and the Chumash, you have the Menorah was round. As you see, it was rounded, according to the Rambam. In fact, the Rambam himself, it's printed, there's a picture here. The Rambam himself drew a picture of the menorah. He found it in the Rambam's Pirush Mishnayos, I think. But there's a picture, this is the printed diagram of the Rambam's picture of the menorah. And Rashi agrees, by the way, it's interesting, I don't know why they do it like this, because Rashi in Chumash says that the branches of the menorah went out ba'alachsen. Alachsen's diagonal. You know, not rounded, diagonally up. And therefore, according to the Rambam, according to Rashi, it went not rounded, it went up, like you see in the, what's the, called Chabad menorahs, that they go up, because the Rebbe maintains that this is what Rashi says, and this is what Rambam says, this is probably the way it was. But the Ebenezer, if I'm not mistaken, maintains it was taka round. Okay, now, before we even go into the Menorah a little bit, the Menorah, what any picture of the Menorah that you're going to see, the Menorah, as the Torah is going to explain, was beat out of one piece of gold. Normally, craftsmen, they, you know, solder things, the jewelers, they solder things together to make the various different jewelry pieces and so on. The Menorah was one piece of solid brick of gold, as the pasuk says, was a kikar. A kikar is a lot. It's 150 pounds of gold. The menorah weighed 150 pounds because a kikar is 3,000 shkolim. So, by the way, they mention, so it just to diverse a second, Haman offered Achashverosh to destroy the Jews. He said, Aseres alofim kikar kesef. 10,000 kikar of silver. He offered to Achashverosh to destroy the Jews. Achashverosh said, I'll keep the money and do anyway to the Jews. If you figure a kikar, 150 pounds, do you know what gold, okay, but do you know what 10,000 kikar weighs? 750 tons of silver. 750 tons of silver. Haman offered Achashverosh to destroy the Jews, and Achashverosh said, keep your money, I don't need it. And destroy the Jews anyway. So you can imagine what the wealth that you're talking about. But the menorah was made out of one block of gold. That gold, the Pasuk says, clearly was a kikar, which the Mefarshim explained, which is 3,000 shekel. A shekel is 0.8 ounces of silver, I mean of gold, whatever. And they make a cheshbon, it's 150 pounds of gold. Now they took that block of gold, and with a hammer, they banged it out until you get to all the whole menorah with all the designs on it, and all the, you know, it was an unbelievable piece of work. And the Torah says it had to be out of miksha. Now, before we go into the actual construction of the menorah, the Medrash says, Hashem says in the pasuk earlier in Chumash, v'zeh maseh, and baleischutz later in Chumash, v'zeh maseh ha-menorah miksha zov. V'zeh. This is the way you should make the menorah. So Chazal tell us, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't figure it out. How do you make a menorah? So Hashem, two things. Hashem showed him a fiery menorah, and Hashem said, "This is, you see, this is the way to make it." And then we'll learn in our pasuk that the menorah was made by Hashem himself. So the Mefarshim explained two things happened. First, Hashem showed, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know how to make it. Hashem showed him a fiery menorah. And even afterwards, Moshe Rabbeinu still didn't get it. Hashem said, you know, just throw the gold into the fire, and out came a menorah.
So how come there is so many opinions of what the menorah looks like then? At least there are three opinions of what the menorah looks like.
You should be happy there's only three.
Three.
Let me tell you a little secret. Let me tell you a little secret. I don't want to insult you. You only know of three opinions. There's many, much more than three opinions about every part of the menorah. There's different opinions in the Gemara, in the Midrashim, in the commentaries of the Chumash. But the menorah itself was beat out of, again, like we said, one piece of gold, and then they beat the whole thing out. Now, the menorah, the Rambam writes, did not necessarily have to be made from gold. In fact, the Rambam writes, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, when the Jews came up to build the second Beis HaMikdash, they went up with Ezra, the Jews were very poor. They made the menorah out of tin, out of copper, because they had no money to make it out of gold. And then, when they got you know, more money, then they, because it's a big piece of gold. I mean, you know how much 150 pounds of gold is? It's a tremendous amount of money. So then they made it again out of gold.
Would it have to be mixture?
No. But the Rambam writes, if it's made out of regular metal, it didn't have to be mixture. It didn't have to be made out of one piece. And not only that, all the designs of the menorah also didn't need. Only when it was made out of gold. Okay, so let's start actually getting into a little bit into the menorah itself. So the pasuk says, "Vasisa menorah zahav tari." If to make the menorah out of pure gold, which is a very high grade of gold, miksha, you should make it hammered out. Te'asa hamenorah, and here it's interesting. It says te'asa. Rashi says te'asa means by itself, because it should have said in Hebrew ta'asa menorah. Te'ase means passive. It was made by itself. But simple meaning is, this is the way the menorah should be made. Yirecha v'kana, its base, its shaft. Gviyeha, its cups. Kaftireh, its knobs. Ufracha, and its blossoms, its flowers. Mimeno yihiyu, should be from the menorah itself. So we're going to learn a few more psukim to get the general idea of the menorah, and then we're going to see exactly all the decorative parts of the actual branches of the menorah. Now, the menorah had the central shaft. The middle, again, is one piece of gold, but the middle one is actually called the menorah. The other branches, the branches coming up, are called the knei ha-menorah, the branches of the menorah. So there was one actual menorah, meaning the middle piece, and from it came the six branches, whether it was this way or this way, the various opinions, but the branches came out of, they were called the Knei HaMenorah, the branches of the Menorah. So he says like this, Shisha Konim Yeitu Mitzadah, I'm going to explain each one of these things in a second. Shisha Konim Yeitu Mitzadah, six poles, six branches came from the middle one. Shleisha Knei Menorah Mitzidah Echad, from one side of the menorah came three branches, the shleisha knei ha-menorah mitzida hasheni, and three branches of the menorah from the second side. So you had the middle shaft, which is called, like we said, the menorah itself, and then you have the three branches coming up. Now, in the menorah itself, there were, like he says in the previous pasuk, there's the shaft, which is the middle one, then the cups were the top of each piece of the menorah, was the cups that they put the oil into to light the menorah. Then they had its knobs and its blossoms. Now, we're going to see Gvieha, its cups, were like this. The Rambam says they're like upside down Alexandria cups. That's the way the Rambam describes it. They were, you know, drinking cups. In the olden times, they used to have cups that were wide on top and it became narrow at the bottom. That was the way the Rambam says the Alexandria cups used to be. So this was upside down, was the way the Gevim went. Okay? And we'll see, in these pictures, you're not going to see it at all, the way it looks.
Meaning wide on the bottom?
What? Upside down, meaning?
Narrow.
The narrow part on top, and the wider part was down. That was the part of the decoration. So, and we'll see how many Gevim were on each branch, and how much on the central shaft. But I'm just telling you what the Gevim are. The Gevim were upside down cups, wide on one side and narrow on the next. Okay? Then you had Kafteirel, the knobs. The knobs were actually round balls that looked like not an apple, which is perfectly round, but oblongated apple that was like a little bit oval shaped. They look like a pear. The Rambam used the expression like a tapuach, that it's a little bit oval shaped. That was with the kafteirel, and for Rachel, that actually looked like a design of flowers on it. These pictures, I don't know why they don't have. They're not good pictures in the Rambam's in the Sefer of the Rambam. It's much clearer than this. No, Moshe Rabbeinu had a different problem. Moshe Rabbeinu's problem that Hashem told him miksha and Hashem told him throw it into the fire, to discuss it a little bit spiritually before we get into the details. The kindling of the menorah, why was it seven branches? Like we learned a week, we mentioned in passing a week or two ago, the Beis HaMikdash didn't need the light. The way the menorah, the windows of the Beis HaMikdash, not the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, was that normally windows are made that light can come into the house. Okay, we learned the windows in the Beis HaMikdash were made that light should go out. The Gemara says, Rashi quotes it out, V'chila eirahu tzarech, does God need light? Okay? Ela simen hu l'cha boi eilam, this is a sign, a miracle to show the world that God rests amongst the Jewish people. So the question is, if it's anyway not for light, so make two branches. What, seven branches? What, not nine, not eight, not seven, dafke seven. I mean, what's the cheshbon seven? So in Sfarim it's explained that there's seven, besides the 7 days of the week, but that's, there are seven emotional attributes, seven midot, as they're called. Now, there are Jews that serve Hashem with love, which is Ava and Chesed. There are Jews that serve Hashem with Yira. There's Jews that serve Hashem with Rachmanis. There are seven different ways that a Jew can serve God. The concept of kindling the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was the symbolizing Aaron HaKohen kindling the neshama of every Jew. Kindling the neshama of every single Jew. And therefore, what was the job of Aaron HaKohen, or whoever lit the menorah, to go and light the various flames each night? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand. The Jews are so different. This is a Ava Jew and a Yira Jew. Ava and Yira are opposites. What, love and fear are basically two opposite things. So, okay, there's a better book than this. Okay. Now this is a much, you're not going to be able to see it from here. This thing is the word Rambam, you see the dark, the short one in the middle, the small one in the middle? That's the Rambam's picture. There's a big one in Kutas Sichas. This is the Rambam's version of the menorah. The way the Rambam actually drew it with his own hand. And then, this is the Menorah, according to the Rambam's opinion, you know, that it was diagonally going up. Okay? But Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand how in the world can one Jew light up all seven different types of Jews. They're opposite Jews. How can you illuminate each different type of a Jew? So Hashem said, all Jews, though, maybe they're different down here, but all Jews come from the same place. In other words, Hashem said, all Jews come from the original block of gold. They're just beaten out. And when they're beaten out and they're formed, so then you have this Jew coming down like this, and this Jew coming like this, and this Jew coming like this. But in the source, all the Jews are the same. All the Jews are the same. And Moshe Rabbeinu still didn't get it. So Hashem showed him a fiery menorah. What does it mean, the fiery menorah? The question is, how could you kindle a Jew who's not interested? You know, he's just not there. He doesn't know anything about Yiddishkeit. Doesn't want to know anything about Yiddishkeit. So Hashem said to him, every Jew is a fire. Every Jew has a neshama. Every Jew. So when you kindle the menorah, you can get to that Jew. It's a menorah shel eish. Every Jew has a fire within him, and fire attracts fire. So when you light the menorah of another Jew, it's in a way that you can actually kindle the menorah of every single Jew. And that's why, because when you learn the menorah, there are harder things to make in the Beis HaMikdash than the menorah. We mentioned, Rashi says later in Vayakil, or Pekudei, I think Vayakil, says over there, Tovim in O'izim, the women wove the coverings of the Mishkan, the Yiras Izim, the goatskin coverings. They wove it, Rashi says, Tovu min ha'izim. Rashi says, they wove it while it was still on the goat. Trust me, I think that's harder than making a menorah beat out of gold. So that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have a problem with. Only the menorah he had a problem with. So you have to say, it wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu. They had great craftsmen in those days. They built the pyramids. These guys were experts. Not like today, people don't know how to do anything. Today you press buttons and things happen. Those days, people, nowadays nobody knows how to think, how to add. Take a calculator, a computer. Years ago, people used to use the brain to figure out 1 and 1 is 2. Today they say 1 minute. They get 1 and 1 is 2. In those days, they had craftsmen. They were expert craftsmen. It wasn't such a hard deal to take a menorah and beat it out. So obviously Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand something much deeper in the menorah. What Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand in the menorah, how in the world can you kindle so many different Jews? How in the world can you kindle a Jew that's out of it? So Hashem said to him, the menorah is made by itself. Throw it into the fire. In other words, just connect the Jew to fire and it will come lit up. And there's a famous, the Rebbe has a famous sikh about the concept of kindling the menorah, because like we mentioned, somebody once asked the Rebbe Rashab, 2 Rebbes ago, what is a chassid? And he said, a chassid is a lamplighter. We spoke about that at Shabbos. A chassid is a lamplighter. In Yiddish, it's called a lamchernik, or Russian. A lamchernik is a lamplighter. What's a lamplighter? In Europe, they had on the corners, they had kerosene lamps. And at night, a guy would walk with a long stick with a fire at the end of the stick, and he would go light the street lights. So he was called the lamplighter, lamchernik he was called. So he says, a chassid is a lamchernik. What does it mean? Every Jew has everything ready. There's an oil, and there's a wick, and there's a menorah, everything is there. Some Jews are not lit up yet. So a chassid goes with a stick with fire on it, and they go around and they light it, kindle the menorah of every Jew. So there's an interesting din. There's a lot of dinim with the menorah, but in the kindling of the menorah, there's three major dinim. Number one, that hadlaka ksheda bizar. The Gemara says, the kindling of the menorah, you didn't need to be a kohen, believe it or not. A Yisrael, a Levi, any Jew was able to light the menorah. But the preparation of the wicks and the oil, that had to be done through a kohen. Which is strange. That means the preparation of the oil and the wicks, getting it ready, only a kohen could do. But the actual lighting of the menorah, every Jew could do. And the third din is, where did they light Menorah? Not like Chanukah, you light it outside. The Menorah and the Beis Hamikdash, they lit inside. That's the three differences. So the Rebbe explains like this. A guy can come along and say, who am I to kindle a Menorah? Who am I to come to another Jew and talk to them about Yiddishkeit? I'm not a Kohen, I'm not a rabbi, I'm not paid for it to do it. I'm a nothing, I'm a simple Jew. Who am I to come to another Jew and light him up? So the answer to that is, the kindling of the Menorah, you don't have to be a Kohen. In the Beis Hamikdash, any Jew, no matter who you are, is able to go kindle the Menorah in the Beis Hamikdash. So then the Jew will come along and say, okay, you know what? But I'll do it my way. You know, I'll do compromise a little bit here, compromise a little bit there, do this, do that, and I'll kindle the Menorah my way. So the halacha is no. The way how to do it, the preparation of the oil and the wicks, that the Kohanim have to set up. Meaning, the Torah, the holy people, they set up how to do it. Once they set up how to do it, everybody could do it. But you have to follow their guidelines, not your own guidelines of how to get it ready to go. And the third thing is that you have to kindle the Menorah and the deeper part of the Beis Hamikdash, meaning you have to touch the deep part of the Jew to reveal the essence of the Jew and kindle the Menorah. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand, coming back to your question, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand how in the world can you do that? Seven different types of Jews. The Jews are not even interested. How in the world can you kindle them? So Hashem said, but look, all the Jews are the same thing. Every Jew comes from the same place. And in fact, to explain it even in a lengthier way, Jews are called in Chumash, Banim Atam Lashem Elokeichem. Jews are called children of God. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe asks a very simple question. If all neshamas are chelek alokami mal, every nesham is a part of God, how come there's so many different levels of neshamas? They're the heads of the Jewish people, and they're the hands of the Jewish people, and the feet of the Jewish people. If all neshamas come from the same place, how could there be so many, all Jews should be the same? So what is the answer to the question? The Pasuk says, Banim Atam Hashem Elokeichem. We are God's children. The child, where does the child come from? It comes from the seed, the zera, of the father. What happens? The mother, through pregnancy, takes the zera and broadens it through 9 months of pregnancy until it becomes a baby, an entire baby. That means from when that one, which is called the tipa, the one drop of the zera, you form the head, the hands, the stomach, the feet, the toenails. I feel it's Tziponer Aglov. Even the toenails of the child come from where? The Zera of the father. Meaning, the whole body of the child comes from one place. What differentiates between this part of the seed becomes a head, and this part of the seed becomes a toenail? So through the 9 months of pregnancy, you develop it, the mother develops it in such a way that this becomes the hand, and this becomes the foot, and this becomes the stomach, and this becomes the head, and the toenails, and so on and so forth. But where does it come from? The whole body, from head to toe, comes from the same place. So the same thing says like this. All neshamis come from the same place. From the world of Atzilus. Part of God. But then the neshama has to come down, and it has to come into a body. So it has to come down through four worlds. And each world has 10 levels. So some come express, freeway, and some take the local streets. Meaning, neshamas of tzaddikim, that are the heads of the Jewish people, their neshamas are from the world of Atzilus. And then they take the freeway straight down, meaning they're not affected by the city streets. They're not affected by the worlds on the way down, Briya, Yetzir, and Asiya. They go straight down. So down here, they're on the level of Atzilus. So they're the heads. Then you have people that are affected by the world of Briya, and they go freeway for Yetzirah and Asiyah. Some people are affected by Yetzirah, some people are affected by Asiyah. But all Jews all come from the same place. And that's why it says, Bonim Akam Lashem Elokeichem. Obviously God didn't give birth to us like babies in a physical sense. It means, just like the relationship between the child and the father, that the entire child comes from the Chachma of the father, which produces the Zera, and that is what equates every Jew together. And that's the concept of the Meneda. The spiritual concept of the Meneda and the Beis HaMikdash represents, not only, we're going to learn a lot of miracles of the Meneda, with all the candles facing the west, a lot of miracles, but the general concept of the Meneda in serving God, represents the kindling of one's own neshama, with the light of Torah, ner mitzvah v'torah or, and kindling the Meneda of every other Jew, because with the realization that you and me and him and her and she and he and it and whatever is really all the same Jew. It's all the same body that comes from the same place of the Father. It all comes from the Father and the Mother. And therefore, when you talk about kindling another Jew, the attitude has to be that this Jew and me are really one thing. This became the hand and this became the foot, but so what? It's the same body. It's the same person. And therefore, you can kindle every other Jew, even if you're not a Kohen, even if you're not a holy person, you're a regular Jew, you can kindle the Menorah of another Jew. The Ner Hashem, Nishma Sodom, the Neshama, which is the candle of God, that has to be kindled. That has to be the way it's done. Okay. When we get into more details of the Menorah, then we're going to see, you know, exactly how it works with all the branches and everything else. Okay.